In today's quest, we learn that hell hath no fury like a lover's vengeance. This is the quest for power. Welcome back to the quest for power, where we are ranking and reviewing all of the European monarchs from the early Middle Ages to World War I. We are Scott and Michael, and you are joining us on the power struggle for the Ostrogothic crown and for Italy itself. Like always, like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram at Quest for Power Pod, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. So, with all that out of the way, introduction, let's get into our modern history. Michael, what's been going on?
I decided that I wanted someone to shoot lasers into my eyes, and now I can see 20/20. I got LASIK surgery, and yeah. It has been awesome. I really wish I had done this sooner. It was so quick. I think I had 2 days really of like recovery, but I could see right away, and it gets clearer and clearer every day. So it's people who do not have glasses or contacts. It's amazing to like go to sleep at night and you still see before, you know, you close your eyelids, or like you wake up and you can look at the clock. You don't need to reach for your glasses or stuff like that. It's the littlest things that are just so cool. Although I do find myself keep thinking, do I have to take my contacts out? Oh no, that's weight. I don't. I didn't leave them in there. They're not there.
Yeah, that's kind of surreal. I have like some nearsightedness, but it's not bad to the point where I need glasses for like most day-to-day stuff. It's mainly like if I'm like really tired, particularly like night driving, things like that. But apart from that, it's livable, but there may come a day. I thought about it. I had a coworker who also got eye surgery, and he's like, man, this stuff's great. So
yeah. Yeah. It was like an intense eye exam. It was I had like a really, really good doctor, and I think that made all the difference. Like I was told by some people they take Valium. Like the doctors actually give them Valium beforehand to like settle them down. And I was not given that at all. I was given nothing. I was just given the calm words of a doctor telling me, look, I understand you're a little nervous because, I mean, it's a terrifying thought.
Yeah. God forbid. Yeah, I need these to see, and I don't want you to make it worse.
Yeah. So, like, and there is a second you do go blind, and the way this doctor, it was like he was hypnotizing me. He was just the whole way through. He's like, it's just going to be a little light show you're going to go through. It's going to be a bit intense. Just relax. Enjoy the show. And he kept going like, oh, this is nothing. And but you don't know. It's not even that. It literally feels like have you ever had like those eye exams where, you know, the thing that it's usually like a hot air balloon comes in and out of focus, yeah, or whatever. It's essentially that, just a little bit more colors, but you don't feel a zap. You don't know.
That's kind of wild. Cause it is. Yeah, Yeah, I get squeamish about it, but we'll see how.
I thought I would too. Like, that was what I was thinking, is what you were thinking. I'm like, oh my God, I'm just going to have to like take whatever the uncomfortable feeling is, you know, for like 10 seconds or however long that it was. And it was like 30 seconds each eye. That was it.
That's a long time. That's longer than I thought, actually.
But for the actual laser, I think it was mine because I was way more blind than most, so maybe that was why, because I heard some people had like 10 seconds. It's just like a very intense eye exam, so those 30 seconds, and they count it down for you, which is kind of nice because you're like, all right, almost done. And then once you do one eye, it's like, Well, the second eye, it's, you know what's coming.
Yeah. We're halfway there. And no going back now.
Yeah, I can't really have. Yeah, so it was cool. Well, so enough about that. What have you been up to?
Fighting off sickness after a work trip and then a concert. So
that both of those will get you sick, especially if the work trip involved airports.
I spent a lot of time. Well, it actually wasn't that bad. I had like two, I don't know, like how long? I had like relatively short layovers, so not bad. But yeah, a lot of like socializing, and I have no way of like confirming this, but like I was in the airport and like went to like the restroom, and like this guy next to me is just like hacking along, and I'm like, oh my god, if this is like this is where I get sick, this is it.
You could pinpoint to the exact moment in time.
It could be, yeah. So you know, so I guess if you're in the Washington DC airport, watch out. So yeah, I'm a little rough from that, because like my whole weekend was basically like shot with this like mildly annoying sickness. But on the bright side, very fun work trip, very fun concert, got to see the Birthday Massacre, which is much less terrifying than it sounds.
I was gonna say, that sounds very interesting. It's a heavy metal, it's got to be a heavy metal band, right?
No, they're like I think like the musical, like, or the genre, I think it's called like dark wave, I guess. It'd be like, it's like early 2000s, like they use a lot of like keyboard synthesizer, but they do have like some pretty good like guitar lines and stuff too. But I'd say they're like more, they're closer to rock than anything. But no, they got some good vibes. So yeah, fun show. Like, and it was a really tiny venue. Like the lady who was singing, she was like high-fiving the crowd while she was singing because the stage was that close.
Oh, that's wow. That's
pretty. They were just like lovable goose on stage. Really fun. And I guess now I'm paying for it. So
yeah, it happens.
So all right. So we can move on to our next segment here. So, but before we get started, let's talk about what happened last time. So the last time we went through the misfortunes of Vitiges, or Vitiges.
Vitiges is what I've been saying, but you never know.
So Vitiges, Vitiges, Vitiges. However you like to say it, because the unfortunate one. Learned. yes. A person who was reasonably competent, but proceeded to just like, you know, roll snake eyes on every turn.
Yeah. Nat one every single time. Terrible. That's right. And even without disadvantage. But oh no, I'd say he had disadvantage because he had no supplies. Rome had all the supplies.
Yeah. So you know, competent man. Bad times, he fled, and now we've got somebody new.
Yes, that we do. But before we jump into somebody new, we have our sources we gotta just put out there. We have, of course, Procopius. He's from the Roman point of view, as we discussed in all the episodes. And if you're listening to these in a row, you're probably annoyed at this by now. He is writing on behalf of Justinian. He is alive during the events of this episode. However, there's at one point during the Gothic War where he goes back to Constantinople and is no longer in Italy with Belisarius. I don't remember when that was entirely, but I do know that he eventually goes back. So some of this stuff is going to be hearsay, which, I mean, most history is hearsay, let's be honest. And then we have Jordanes, who every historian loves to pick on. And he comes for the Gothic point of view. So he gives them a little favoritism. But without further ado, let's go on to the main quest. Welcome to the court of Ildabad the Savior, King of the Ostrogoths. I love, before we like dive into his name, I love his name. Like, for a Germanic king, Ildabad, I don't know. I think that's like a perfect name. It fits everything when I think of like a good Germanic tough king.
Because he's bad?
Yeah, because he's bad. Ildabad. It's got ill and bad. I don't know.
Yeah, he's... I enjoy does he get, it. Does he get sick and die? Ildabad?
That's a good one. Well, we will have to find out, shall we? With the death and capture of Vitiges, well, vice versa, with the capture and then eventual death of Vitiges, there's a big power vacuum that is currently in the top of the remnants of the Ostrogothic kingdom. Many of the Gothic nobles, because remember, Goths, they elect their kings. They wanted a man named Urias. I'm going to go with that. I can't believe I pronounced that. To succeed Vitiges, and Urias was in Tictinium, which is modern-day Pavia, northern Italy area. And it is one of the very few cities held by the Ostrogoths. Urias was considered a great commander in the Ostrogothic army, and he was actually a nephew of Vitiges. So, you know, he was blood-related. So you would think... right, that he would become, that they would select him as the king, but we're not talking about Urias, we're talking about Ildabad. How did this happen?
Because Urias knows better.
Yes, that is true. He does know better. He refused the crown, and he said, my family does not hold enough royal lineage, and he in favor of Ildabad, who controlled Verona, and who is in northern Italy, Verona is in northern Italy. It's between Milan and Venice. In this day and age, though, Scott, would you refuse the crown? Obviously, you said you would. It puts a target on your back, and it's not a fun job. But if you refuse, that current king is obligated to kill you because you automatically are a threat to his rule.
Yikes. I mean, the main reason I would not want to is because, like, the kingdom's kind of in a rough spot. If you just, lose everything, you know, that's like your, that's like your death warrant, kind of. You might be able to, like, escape as, like a prisoner, right? Or, I say escape. You might be able to live as a prisoner, but...
I was gonna say, I'm not sure. They don't like to put threats to prison. They like to put threats on spikes.
Well, you know, at least as like as far as some of our record goes, you think of like some of the Vandals, right? Who are just like, yep, they get like carted off to, you know, Constantinople to live indeterminate amounts of life. But
yes, but that's Romans. These are Germanic barbarians.
Oh no, no, I'm saying when they get demolished by Rome, because. That's what it, like, you have to think. Oh, like, I'm thinking,
okay.
I'm an Ostrogoth, I'm next in line for the Ostrogothic king. Rome just ran us over. They steamrolled us. They made a deal with us only because it was, like, costly for them to, like, continue fighting.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Okay, yeah.
Like, we have only a few cities, like, actually, like, left in Italy at this point, right? Why would I want to be, like, the captain of this sinking ship at this point?
That is true.
Like, you hope your best bet is, like, you know, either you get out. Like, I think it depends on how merciful you think people are going to be when your ship sinks, because I can't imagine. And again, this is like a retrospective, like, you know, thing, but like, can you really, like, after like this like huge like defeat, just be like, yeah, I think, you know, the Ostrogothic kingdom is totally going to be okay.
The biggest thing is, like, I have control over my own destruction, at least, if I take the kingship, versus I am solely giving all of the mercy to the king, which in historic terms, they generally don't keep their threats alive. It generally does not happen. Most of the time, those threats get killed. along with their entire family.
Yeah. So you think that the guy who says no would be less threatening, but
I don't know what it is, but it's I agree with you. Like, in common sense terms, you're like, well, he's not a threat. He said he didn't want it. Why, you know?
It's like Monty Python. The he's so humble, so that means he's the Messiah. He's the true leader.
Yes, that's right. So, Ildabad was not an Ostrogoth, though. He's actually a Visigoth, and he is the nephew of the first non-Balti Visigothic king, Theodis. And both of these leaders, Urias and Ildabad, held only one city at the time. So you are right. The Ostrogothic empire kingdom is down to two cities. And that's all they get in 540. The rest, they're surrounded by, you know, Roman control. Again, very loose Roman control. It's not like Rome has everything locked down. But it's still not great. One of the first things he did was he moved his royal court to Tictinium, which, if you remember, that's where Urias was. And when he did this, he actually created this narrow strip of land that became under Gothic control because, you know, they needed like a little highway of sorts to, you know, get the
goods things back and forth between their cities. Yeah,
exactly. So he had to get a little bit of land that way. Ildabad, though, he had a little more grudge with the Romans, other than the fact that, you know, they just almost wiped out the entire kingdom. When Vitiges was captured and taken to Constantinople, Ildabad's children were also sent there as part of the spoils of war. We don't know anything said about his wife, but there's a pretty good idea that his wife was too. So he probably had vengeance on his mind when he received the crown, because he was not going to see them again. Justinian was good at using Belisarius to capture land, but Justinian was not the brightest at maintaining control of it. We've been talking about Justinian for a while now. He has been the driving force behind Rome during pretty much all of this Gothic war. His big thing is he wants to conquer all of Rome all over again. I wonder how he's going to get to the British Isles, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. After his victory in Italy, Justinian gave Belisarius a triumph. Do you remember what those were, Scott?
It's parades and king for a day.
In ancient Rome it was god for a day, but yeah, probably this was king for a day at this time. And then he gave him a nice big parade, patted him on the back for a job well done, and then proceeded to forget about Italy and just left 11 separate commanders scattered in little fortresses all over to hold Italy. But for some reason, he left no central command in place. He then compounded his bad decision with another. He infested the land with tax collectors, squeezing the population of Italy resources. When the Gothic War, you know, it was a war. It destroyed a crap load of land already.
Yeah, that's kind of like a difficult thing, is like administering like stuff you've conquered. It's just kind of crazy because like, what, it's been like what, 60 or so years
about 60 years since Rome was captured by Theodoric. Yeah,
it kind of feels like that the people there don't really miss Rome. It feels like things would have gone more smoothly, particularly on the administrative side, if people were clamoring to go back to Rome.
It seems like certain people were like in the cities, but I can guarantee on the countryside they're like, no, we're fine, go away.
we've been subsistence farming for like, you know, 10 generations or something, and you know, by gum, we're gonna do it for another 10.
He had this governor, Governor Alexander the Logothete, the auditor, installed by Justinian, and his brilliant idea was to collect taxes all the way back from the end of Theodoric's reigns. You think the IRS is bad on back taxes? There was an entire other government in place, and they want to collect taxes for that entire time.
Ah, you know, the place that's been in constant war for like 60 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They'll have a lot of money.
Especially because, you know, they were paying taxes to the Ostrogoths at this time, so they already don't have money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you would think with all of this money they're grabbing, right, they would at least pay their soldiers.
No. That's, no. That doesn't, yeah.
No. Why would you pay the people with sharp pointy things that gave you Italy?
Well, you know, they're all the way in Italy. We just got to pay the soldiers who are here in Constantinople.
I mean, that is fair. So, as you can imagine, this is a pretty intense situation going on right now. We have the Roman populace who is under Gothic control, and now they have buyer's remorse. They are like, why did we want Rome back? This is not what we signed up for. And then many of the troops, the people fighting for Rome, told their commanders to piss off, and then, I'm not fighting for you anymore. In fact, I'm going to go fight for them against you. Which, I mean, you're not paying your soldiers. What do you expect?
Yeah, these are not, this is not the volunteer fighting force.
Yeah, so, well, the Gothic War was at a standstill. Constantinople believed it was pretty much over. I mean, look, they celebrated already. They threw this big parade. It's done, you know? Ildibad let them know they were sorely mistaken. He struck the Romans first by expanding his lands to the Venetia and Liguria north of the River Po. And most of this was a dump basically by the inhabitants. You go, you know, you're evil Aryan heretics, but I would still much rather deal with you than the out-of-touch Constantinople.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, at least these people are gonna, you know, at least have some skin in the game if, you know, you get invaded.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, even though they're going to hell, at least right now, they're they're gonna be a little bit better for us.
Well, our ruler's going to hell. You know, I've got my, you know, I've got my, like, secret Nicene, you know, like, altars and stuff in my house.
That's true. That is true.
I don't know. It kind of seems like the general gist of, like, half of these, like, these Gothic kingdoms has been a lot of just, like, well, probably half the time is because they're in a huge position to care. But, like, you know, a lot of them are a little more lax than, you know, your Nicene variants.
The only ones who are kind of nuts was Geiseric, and well, he was just a bloodthirsty general to begin with, so I think he just used that, you know, as an excuse to start killing people.
It's probably, I would wager that's probably better to be a Nicene Christian in Aryan country than an Aryan in Nicene.
Yes,
country.
Definitely. Definitely. In 541, a Roman general by the name of Vitalis was stationed in Venetia, and he was getting fed up with the lack of Roman inaction. You know, Congress isn't doing shit over there. And so he's like, he took matters in his own hands. He grabbed a large force of Heruli warriors, and he's like, all right, we're going to deal with these Goths since, you know, Rome doesn't want to. Well, Ildibad was feeling very generous, and he granted the general's wishes. He met him at the Battle of Tarbesium, which is near the city of Treviso, and he absolutely obliterated the Roman forces. The Roman general Vitalis was very lucky to escape with his life. And his nephew, by the name of Totila, who will become important later, then became the commander of this garrison over in Trevioso.
All right.
So, hey, we got a big city, you know, that's some points. Got a big victory. Got to slap Rome up a little bit. That's always fun.
Yeah, well, when you're not paying your soldiers.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, I guess you could say that the people who are left fighting are the ones who truly care.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or just too, like, lazy or scared to, you know, leave over to Gothic.
Yeah, sides. they're like the evil minions in the stories, the stormtroopers or whatever, for some reason just decided, you know, to be with the evil, just faceless evil soldiers.
Yeah, well, I always assume that, like, when I think of, like, Star Wars, that, like, the Empire would, like, you know, at least give them some, like, just, like, even if it's horrible, just, like, some, like, lousy pay. Like, this is, like, their equivalent of, like, a desk job, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no, this is no pay. We've established that. So this is this is worse than the Empire.
Yeah, this is very true. So everything, you know, he just got his a big victory. He's been expanding, you know, the Ostrogothic kingdom, which was on the verge of collapse. If not, it was pretty much extinct except for two lousy little cities. Not everything was going great. Despite his victories, he began getting suspicious that, shocker, Urias was plotting to overthrow him, despite, you know, Urias going, no, thank you, I don't want it, to the crown earlier.
No, so he didn't kill him. See?
Yeah, look at that. No, he didn't want it. I guess doing the Jon Snow, again, you don't know this because of Game of Thrones, but this the memeable line now, I don't want it, is what Urias was doing.
Because, yeah, that's, you know, we were just talking about how you could, how you were likely to get killed by the king if he refused. And it's not looking like that, at least so far.
Yeah. His suspicions weren't really of his own. Apparently, his wife was offended that Urias's wife was living a more lavish luxury lifestyle than the queen of the Ostrogoths, and that was a disrespect to the queen.
I feel like that's something that maybe it's just like movies and stuff talking, but that feels like something that, like, is a common sense thing.
I mean,
do you really want to show up royalty?
Yeah. I mean, yes. Yeah. But the situation, I mean, yeah, correct. You shouldn't be showing up royalty. There's literal laws against it. I think you can't wear purple in a number of kingdoms. It was that way in Rome too. Unless you were part of the royal family.
It feels like it's bad taste.
Yeah, correct. But it didn't need to get to this point. The situation got so out of control that it ended up with Ildabad ordering the death of Urias.
Nice.
It's a bit much. I love my wife. I will do anything for my wife. I don't think I would kill because of Ron over next door. His wife is, you know, living a more lavish lifestyle. She has a Lamborghini and we just have a Range Rover.
Boy, tough breaks, huh?
I mean,
yeah.
You kill someone, like, to appease your wife's vanity.
I think, you know, not to justify it, but I feel like that being royalty and showing yourself up to royalty is, like, you know, if you equate, like, you know, living well and money to power, then it's kind of like you,
that is fair,
you know, flexing that you probably have more power or as much power as, like, the royalty. Like, I, you know, that, and also she was probably just jealous, but Not to justify court killing, but if I feel like wealth, oddly enough, has greater stakes in, like, royalty than us in our more capitalist-esque or mixed economy society.
I mean, yeah, royalty was, you were looked, I forgot, oh, what book was it? It was called like the, not the Iron Throne or the Iron King, I think something like that. It was one of the things that George R. R. Martin used as inspiration, and it's based off of real events in France that happened. Basically, there's this rich, rich, rich merchant, you know, way wealthier than this poor little nobility family. But the nobility family was ranked much higher up in society than this wealthy beyond all means, you know, like billionaires family. And when one of the sons of the merchants married a daughter of like one of the lowest royalty, that they wanted to kill him for that. So like royalty doesn't, I don't think it matters as much as, I think it matters more than wealth does at this point.
Yeah.
Again, fun little story. There's a problem with it. It's probably complete bullshit made up by Procopius to humanize the cause of events. Several historians have gone on to say this. I mean, let's be real. There's no way a Roman contemporary historian who is on the ground in the fog of war would know the plots unless they are somehow interacting with Rome. And I highly doubt that Procopius would deem it necessary to write about a feud between two wives.
Well, if it resulted in someone's death.
I mean, yeah. Gothic historian Herwig Wolfram believes that Urias was actually murdered because of Vitiges's clan, who was our previous king, allied with non-Gothic barbarian tribes to overthrow Ildibad. So basically, Ildibad took out his biggest threat at the time, which is more of Occam's razor, if let's be honest. The one's more fun, it's more flowery, but you know,
yeah,
it's probably something boring as, you know, hey, this guy's, they're trying to overthrow you now. All right, you know, off with their head.
Yeah, I don't know. It speaks to a different conversation piece.
Yeah, which one do you would you go with? Which one is the official quest for power story?
Oh, I mean, it's definitely like, you know, allying with like other clans or you know,
that's what tribes. You think. That's what
well,
you think.
Well, yeah, like it's just so much more practical.
I mean, yeah,
and like, yeah, it's like you'd have to like do something. I feel like pretty more drastic to like make. You know, a slight to the queen like that bad in this time, especially because you're in wartime, you know, right?
It sounds like such like
there's an awful lot of like real things to kill people over, and yeah, like, you know, that doesn't even really equate nearly as much of a power struggle as like you know, the allying yourself with other like tribes or factions. Like I was trying to do mental gymnastics to justify, you know, yeah, this killing. And, you know, this is like much more just like boring, but I think it also speaks to the potential, the lack of instability in the tribe. And then also the wishy-washiness of our good friend. What is it?
Urias.
And also that maybe he started seeing some victories and realized that maybe things weren't as bad as it looked, that Rome was once again overextending itself.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's it. Yeah, I didn't even think of that. But yeah, you hit that on the head. That, yeah, oh, wow. Oh, we actually could, you know, someone did the hard work. Might as well, you know.
Yeah, just shows it can be done and that this isn't as much of a sinking ship as it looks to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, later that year, once again, we're at a medieval feast. So much fun. We love these, right? You're enjoying yourself. You're drinking good wine. You're consuming delicious food. Nothing bad ever happens at these things.
Not the ones we talk about, anyway.
No, never. not at all. You're too busy. We talk about, you know, sorting out alliances and carrying out favors, all that good stuff. You know, good exchange of conversation. And during the feast, it's just a fun little story. His bodyguard, Velas, took Ildabad aside and said, you know, come to your side, and then just stabbed him, killing him right away, ending the Gothic king's short reign.
So sad.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is it. After all the talk of conspiracies, you know, you'd think it would be this big, elaborate plot to bring him down, and nope, it was... we'll tell you why he was stabbed. He was killed because he married Velas's lover off while Velas was away. So basically, like, Velas must have been away fighting at a different thing or something, and Ildabad must have taken that as an advantage to marry off his lover to gain some sort of favor or, you know, some sort of deal.
Boy, and did that to his own bodyguard, huh?
And yeah,
in hindsight, seems pretty bad to piss off the guy who's in charge of your safety.
You think he would have learned? Well, they probably didn't really know about, you know, the Roman bodyguards when, you know, the emperors would piss them off, especially the Praetorian guards, that they would just get a little stabby. That's it. That's all we got for Ildabad. Are you ready to rate him?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, before we start that, if you guys stick around after we rate Ildabad, we will have a bonus king for you. Very fun.
All right. Royal power.
How long do you think his reign was?
Okay. That's short. I'm willing to give him 6 years.
Nope. He reigned from 540 to 541.
Wow.
So about a year.
Yeah, I was going to be generous. My first guess was going to be four, but yeah, that was still, man, really? Cause like, yeah, he really didn't have any, like slow startup moments in his first like years or two.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Normally, like when we hear something like what we just heard, like that was, I don't know, and some of the kings, that was like 10 years worth of material. Basically, let's summarize his power. He was starting to make strides. He was, you know, he took two cities and actually built land and, you know, started getting real power and starting to really challenge Rome. He humiliated a Roman commander and he took this Gothic kingdom, which was, it was almost dead. Like it was just about extinct. And he recaptured most of northern Italy. Yeah, Rome stepped on their own feet, but he capitalized on their stupidity.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think that's overall pretty good. It's
he
just
didn't,
like his
he did,
short
life. Yeah, it's a big what if, because he didn't hit, the way he died wasn't because of some power struggle, it was because he pissed off his bodyguard.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, a short death is, or a short lifespan is kind of a big detractor.
Mm-hmm.
Can't maintain power if you're not there to maintain it. So but, you know, made great strides in a short, you know, time. I'm willing to splurge on like a four, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking a five. I think if we look at his time, like he did really, really well. I couldn't find too many negative things, if any at all, against him during this time. He took, advantage of a situation, which is what you want from your king. So
yeah, it would have, like, if he had just more time to do his thing, I probably would have been like, you know, if he had like at least a few more years under his belt, I probably would have given him like a seven easy.
Yeah, he could have been a Uric for the Visigoths. Like that would
have... It's just hard to justify anything when your reign is less than a year.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
So, all right, well, that makes a four and a five. for a total of 9. So, moving on to the next one. Infamy.
The only fine thing I could find is he had Urias murdered. I mean, it's kind of Andy pissed off his bodyguard. That's about it.
Yeah, those two seem pretty par for the course.
I'm going to say 0. I got nothing.
Yeah. 0s all around. So for a total of 0. Religious passion.
His reign was less than a year, and it was in the middle of a war. Didn't have time to build a church.
No.
Couldn't really build a church.
No.
Couldn't. He probably couldn't even try and, you know, organize some sort of, you know, thing to uplift in that short of time, especially when you're only fighting. So 0.
Yeah. 0's all around for 0. All right. Stability.
Not great. I would not want to live in this age ever. The Gothic War is still raging on, and there's a lot of land being ravaged. As a subsistence farmer, this would suck.
Yeah, that's true. Plus, well, also you have to think, yeah, the taxes rolling through too, right?
Yep. And then if you want to look at it from a court perspective, his court was also a disaster. Like,
clearly
he had Urias murdered, and you know, things weren't going great. I cannot find one stable thing in his raid. I'm gonna have to say 0.
I'm willing to splurge on a 1 here.
Oh.
The only reason is because he's bringing things back from the brink a bit, and he got the strip of land between the two cities. To me, it speaks as like he went from literally the least stable you possibly could be and still be considered a kingdom to having a slightly more solidified, you know, base. This is the only thing.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a step in the right direction.
Okay.
I'm willing to give a point for all me right. personally.
I have to agree with you. I'm going to have to go with 1 as well. I see it. Yep.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta break things down to build them back up.
Yep.
And I think that's like part of it. So, but yeah, pretty rotten overall, but I think it deserves some points. So, all right. On to the next one. The fun one. Royal demise.
I mean, he went for a twist on the classics for this one. He was murdered for a feast by a bodyguard, but for a lover's revenge, not this big elaborate coup. It was kind of fun. He did like a Witcher where he takes a classic fairy tale and twists it a little bit.
Yeah. No, it's not too shabby.
Nah. It doesn't blow me out of the water, but
I mean, it's kind of crazy that, like, I assume, and I don't know this, but like he's bodyguard, right? Like,
yeah.
And I'm assuming that he guards him in more places than just feasts, right?
I mean, it doesn't really say like that.
It could have been just for that one assignment, you know, or like, yeah, yeah, like this is because like it's just, I'm like, why wait till a feast unless he just really wanted to, like,
yeah.
Just make a statement, or it's just, you know, historians being historians.
Yeah, there wasn't exactly tons of information about Velos other than he stabbed Ildabad.
We remember his name.
That is true.
It's just funny that it happened at a feast.
Yeah, so
he got his just desserts.
Oh, that was terrible but fantastic. Oh, what are you going to go with on this one?
It's tough. I feel like that this is like pretty good, but it's not quite there. I'm going to give like a 3 or 4. It's one of those. I'm going to go with 3.
Well, I'll go with 4 and split the difference that way. Cause I was thinking the same thing, 3 or 4.
Yeah, it's tough. It's just like, I feel like it's just kind of like an oddly anticlimactic way, kind of like you're like, you have this big setup like dinner, and it's just like, hey, hey, come here a sec. Just shtick.
Yeah. Yep. It's exactly so, it.
It's like the set pieces were there, and then he just like, you know, could have made some crazy.
It's, you know, it's like a TV show got canceled, or you know, or like they
the writers ran out of budget,
or the
writers went on strike. That's the issue.
The writers went on budget, or like they went, nah, we don't really want his character, or like the actor said, you know what, I got a better gig over here, and so they have to kill him off. Like, he had such great setup.
Yeah. Yeah, failed on execution. All right, so 3 and a 4 for a total of 7. So let's move on to our last one, legacy.
For his dynasty aspect, his children are taken away from Constantinople, never heard from again, no knowledge of his wife or lover that bore his children. So his bloodline died off with him. He set the stage for the Ostrogothic revival by retaking Northern Italy. Unfortunately, he got himself killed before he really got things ramped up, before he shifted, you know, into fifth and sixth gears. His reign is a huge what if. That's his legacy, is what could have happened, not what did happen.
It doesn't really feel like much of anything. I can't really give any points for this.
I'm gonna give 1 because it was a setup, and he's gonna set up someone else's legacy.
That's fair enough.
You know, that's a legacy in and of itself.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, like how far you trace back. But yeah, he walked so that way next person in line could run.
That's a lot of our great kings have a king like this. Think of Gaiseric, one of the best Vandal kings. His brother set him up. Like, we don't know much about his brother, but his brother did a damn good job of taking the Vandals from a know-nothing kingdom to, you know, a respectable force.
Yeah. So, all right. So, a 0 and a 1 for a total of 1. And for our total, so one of the few times where we have, like, a little more meaningful differential between you and I, difference. So 8 plus 11 for a total of 19.
Oh, wow. Who was more generous?
You were.
Ah, wow. That's interesting. Normally I'm not. Well,
yeah, actually, I'm just cynical today, I guess.
Just cynical today.
So, well, all right.
The big question we have, Scott, it is our duty to judge him. Should he become crowned as High King, become a minor lord at court, or be burned at the stake?
It's a tough one, actually.
He definitely should not be burned at the stake.
Well, yeah, that's the obvious one. But I'm willing to just say minor lord, just on the merit that, like, he didn't have time to actually do anything.
Yeah, I can't give him High King. He was not a High King. He was a minor lord, but he could have been great. We're this close to greatness.
Yeah. Squandered.
Shame. Well, you got anything else on him? But it was kind of a letdown after such great buildup.
Yeah. But I think it's interesting that he kind of, you know, he inspired Urias to apparently start getting some, a little bit of conniving.
Yeah.
So I think he showed everyone that, like, hey, we're not completely dead.
I'm not dead.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think I'll go for a walk.
I feel happy. Yeah. That's exactly what it's like. And I think, you know, he's rekindling the spark of the Ostrogoths.
Yes. So, yep.
Very nice.
So, well, that brings us to the short life and reign of Ildibad. Let us know what you thought of him. Were you just as let down as we were? Because that was kind of sad ending. You can catch us at Messenger on Facebook or Instagram at Quest for Power, or email us at questforpowerpod@gmail.com. If you would like to support what we do here, You can, well, and of course, raise your legacy score. Please review us at www.podchaser.com/questforpower. I will have the link also in the show notes below. We will read every 5-star review posted to podchaser.com. It is so much easier than ruling a kingdom on the brink of collapse, and you do not need to worry about getting assassinated by your bodyguard. All you need is to click on the link in show notes and let us know what you think of our tiny little kingdom. Probably a hamlet right now. Alrighty, Scott, are you ready for the bonus king?
Yeah, this was a surprise to me.
I know. I loved, I'm glad I could surprise. I aim to please. Sitting high upon the Ostrogothic throne, we have Eorric, the traitorous bastard, outsider, king of the Ostrogoths. Pretty good title there. Eorric doesn't really appear in the written record until Ildabad dies. Ildabad was really rude and, you know, he got himself assassinated before he could produce an heir, you know, so he left the kingdom in turmoil, pretty unthinking of him. And since he had no heir, the Goths raised Eorric on his shield, proclaiming him as king of the Ostrogoths. Quick little whirlwind.
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting how they may, how they would make a choice for the next guy. Because no bloodline. You just gotta pick, right? Pull straws out of a hat.
Yeah, he wasn't even a Goth. He was a Rugian, which was, you know, they were one of the many tribes allied to the Ostrogoths, but he wasn't a Goth. And he really wasn't the best choice to be crowned king. The big reason for that is he was already plotting to surrender the entire kingdom, so all the work that Ildabad just did, over to the Romans.
Boy, after all that work that we just went through, Ildabad showed everyone, you know, that the Ostrogothic kingdom's the little train engine that could. He wants to just sell it.
Yeah, I wonder if it's like for a company, like a .com company where he builds it up and sells it before it collapses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is a certain point of like you get his favorable terms.
Yeah.
Out of a surrender.
Yeah.
Like show Rome that it's going to be as costly as, if you try and take like every ounce of land from us, it's going to be costly. It could cost you a lot of money from the soldiers you're not paying. And
yeah.
You know, it's just going to be like way too much trouble. So I can understand negotiating at a high point, but
yeah. And also, I'm probably Rome was giving him favorable terms. Like he was going to be able to live as like a Roman noble, which is way, way better than being a Gothic king that is on the verge of death at every, you know, corner.
Yeah.
Look at the previous kings that we've been through, and Justinian is still on the throne over in Constantinople.
Yeah. Well, they got good walls there. So yeah,
that is true. Very good walls. I am excited to go through a Patreon episode where we get to go through that, because that Constantinople's walls is absolutely insane. They're pretty cool. Well, Eorric wasn't really successful in the sale of the kingdom, and he was executed for high treason, putting an end to the second shortest reign we've ever had. So, I mean, you gotta hand it to him. He committed the highest treason possible, and trying not just overthrow the king, but just sell the whole kingdom to their bitterest rival. Like, really go for capital evil on that one.
Yeah, this is something that like it's just so out of left field.
Yeah, so ready to quickly rate him just so we could put him in the rankings before we him to the burn pile.
I was about to ask, do we need to rate him? But honestly, this might just be a nice exercise in how to get a zero, because I got a feeling.
Well, let's go through it. Just
oh, never mind. Infamy is always one. Maybe yes. Maybe a zero is not possible, but yeah. All right, let's go through the steps.
All right.
All right. Royal power.
He don't know how long he reigned. Less than a year. I don't remember.
Zero.
Infamy. I mean, he committed the highest treason possible. He tried to sell his kingdom. Pretty good stuff right there.
Sounds pretty bad, doesn't it?
Pretty bad.
I can't think of like, apart from like being like, you know, sacrilegious, I really can't think of much worse.
Right? I mean, no, he committed the highest of how could you get that's true.
How
more
often, how often are you executing your kings for high treason, right?
I mean, I was gonna say, how many times are we gonna have that in our, you know, podcast? I bet this is the one out of, I don't know, thousands. Yeah, I gotta give him a 10. I mean, that is a one hit wonder, but it is a job well done.
All right, there's those 10 and 10 for 20 points he's ever gonna get.
That's pretty more than a lot of other people.
I mean, it's already, you know, it's already more than Ildabad.
Yeah, that is true. Oh, such a shame.
Religious passion.
Nope. Got not nothing.
When you have like a day. Yeah. All right. Next. Stability. Can we give negative points? Because this is about as bad as it gets, right? Like, he's gonna self.
We have broken this scale before. I mean, I think this might be worthy of a broken scale.
Give him just the negative one.
Just the negative one. I think he broke the scale. I just can't. The reason I included him and just didn't skip him over is he tried to sell the kingdom. Like,
that's so messed up. Can you imagine literally one day or like, you know, whatever after you get like the reins, you're just like, all right. Puts the big old like, you know, like for sale, like Remax, your sign out in front.
Yeah. I got nothing.
Yeah.
Negative one.
Yeah, I'm willing to splurge on the negative ones are all around here. Because that's so unthinkable. Like, can you imagine just like, I don't know, like a US president just like dropping that big old sign out front, like day one. I'm not going to say we've had like, we haven't had our fair share of like really lousy presidents, you know, throughout our history, but
I don't think any one of them has actually offered the United States for sale.
No, but there has been one that offered oil reserves. That's about as bad.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, that's, you know, now that you mention it, yeah, looking at you, President Harding, you're probably unequivalent. Yeah. So, okay, negative one and negative one for negative two. We're restoring balance to the
world. I was gonna say, thank God. He was too high of points.
Royal demise.
He was executed for high treason.
It's kind of interesting.
It is. You get some points for that.
I'm willing to give him one.
One? Oh, yeah. Come on. It's high treason he got executed for. That's true. That's some good stuff. That's no dying of smallpox or dysentery. That's
all right. Yeah, allow me to revise then. I'm willing to give him a 3.
I'm giving him a 3 as well. Yep.
Just don't like him. All right.
No, I hate him.
On to the last one. Legacy.
I mean, he does have a legacy on our podcast. He is going to be one of the only kings to sell, try and put the kingdom for sale. But
yeah,
I mean, in history, come on. Like, I've never heard of that before. I can honestly not think of one where the king tries to sell the whole freaking kingdom.
Yeah, it's a little, I don't know, but like, it's not like he like left like a huge like lasting legacy. I mean, this guy's got to be like a footnote.
No, yeah. Oh, he is totally a footnote. I bet nobody is gonna hear of him except for our podcast. I can't believe I found him. other than, yeah, you know, that's... just because of, you know, it just says next king was this guy for like a hot second. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. And I had to dig in to find like why he was only there for a little bit.
Yeah. It's crazy as he is, I don't think I can give him anything. Like,
I'm gonna give him a one.
A one day king and a footnote at that is, to me, is just,
oh, I mean, yeah. I'm gonna go with one just because it. He did something.
Yeah. All right. So a zero and a one for one. So, all right. So our total is 12 and 13 for 25 points.
That is ridiculous.
Well, you know, for one day was a pretty interesting fellow.
He really, really was. To be clear, I don't know if it was one day. I just don't remember off the top of my head.
It's got to be more than a day. Because, yeah, like, I mean, you got to contact representatives for Rome and actually, like, go through this whole process. I'm sure it was, like, over the course of, like, you know, days or maybe weeks.
And he had to have people with him, you know, and on in the court trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's really short, like, to the point where, again, footnote.
Yeah. All right. Well, we really got to ask this question, Scott. He may be a footnote, but should he be raised to high king of the land, reduced to a little court, minor lord at court, or do we add him to the burn pile?
High king of what land? He sold it all.
he gets burned, light that torch.
that's just so, like,
oh my god,
it's so funny and like a sad sense that, like, literally he sells out the kingdom, like, first order business.
At first, when you read it, you don't think anything of it, because it is just this one sentence in, like, you know, a couple of sources, and that's all it is. And then once you, like, dig into it, it's, and actually think about what he did, it's really funny and, like, not something you hear every day.
Yeah, it's funny in, like, a hindsight, like, kind of sense.
Yeah,
that'd be gosh, it'd be really hard to think about being in, like, the people who lived at that time.
Yeah.
One of the most demoralizing things you probably could experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be, like, horrific. Yeah. Horrible. So, well, that's all we got for Ildabad and the surprise Urek. I bet he was a bigger bonus than most of you thought he would be. I mean, Scott didn't even want to rate him at first. Next episode, we will be reviewing the penultimate Ostrogothic king, Totila, and the Gothic War rages on. And with that, until next time, the king is dead.
Long live the king!